Thank you. I'm Bob Darty, and I am an alcoholic. I'd like to thank the board members here tonight today for inviting Sybil and I up here. This is our first trip to Mont Eagle, and it's been quite an experience. We don't often get a chance to talk in front of a lot of people, and it's kind of special to us. I told Sybil last night, I said, you know, when I talk, I always wanted the lights to go dim and the drums to start and the spotlight to come on me and then not have to make the talk. And that's the way it had been with me. I've never talked on Sunday morning, and put a little extra pressure on me. I was trying to think of how I could be spiritual or deliver a message that would be spiritual. And, I know God intervenes in my life. He always has when I was drunk and since I've been sober, and he's always been with me. And I couldn't think of anything that would be profound. And I ate breakfast this morning and it was raining, and I thought, well, I'll go back to the room and be myself for a little while and talk to God and see if I can get myself straight. And as I was walking down the hall, there was a young man that was, isn't it awful that everybody you see almost looks young to you? But there was a young man, he had two cups of coffee in his hand, and he was headed back to the room, and I opened the door for him, and we went on down the hall, and we opened another door, and another door, and another door, and he was with his coffee and all, and he said something to me that kind of sums up how it is for me. We got to the last door, and he said, it's a good thing you come along, because I'd be having an awful lot of trouble right now if you hadn't. And that's how it is with me and Alcoholics Anonymous. Had you not come along, I'd be having an awful lot of trouble today if I wasn't dead. I'm going to tell you a little bit about how it was with me, and I'll try not to stay drunk too long. I'm sure that my sponsor, and most of y'all know him, his name's Milton, but he'll probably hear this tape, and you know how sponsors are. Bob, you stayed drunk too long. You're staying drunk too long. But you know, if you don't have a whole lot of sobriety, you don't know a whole lot to say. So I stand in awe of people that have a long time sobriety. And I was an awful, awful drunk. When I first started drinking, I was a young fellow. I was a caddy at Pine Hill Golf Course, and us boys was carrying them golf clubs, and my daddy was part of the crowd playing, and we were sneaking beer then and drinking when we could, and I was about 12 years old. And I drank every chance that I got, but we was only drinking beer, and we wasn't really getting in any trouble. And I was kind of idolizing my dad. He was a car salesman, and he dressed nice. And he drove a new car, one that they furnished him, because we certainly didn't have one. And he played golf, and I always thought, well, man, that would be a great life, to be an automobile salesman and to play golf and dress nice. And I started forming in my mind an idea of being something that I knew that I was not. I wanted to be able to dress nice and to have and do all the things. And I started developing a love for material things, because it seemed to me that every time I got something new, and we were not wealthy people, that it always made me feel good. And I never did feel good unless I was getting something new, or that something was happening to me to elevate me above you. I couldn't get on your level. I never did want to be on your level. I either wanted to be way above you, or I was always below you. And I was always afraid. I never did know what I was afraid of. I, I wasn't all that big, never have been big, but I was always insecure, and I went through most of my young life that way. Long about the time I got in high school, some of the boys I was running with was drinking pretty good, and I fell into that crowd. I fell into that crowd because when I took a drink of alcohol, it changed the way that I thought, and it changed who I was. And I never in all of my life could ever stand who I was. I wanted something to change, and I either wanted something material or I wanted something to drink, because when I took that drink of alcohol, I could be on your level. I could talk to you, and I could walk with you, and I could run with you, and I could fight with you, and I could do anything that you wanted to do. And I did not have any problem with alcohol in those days. And my dream finally come true. I turned 21 years old, and I had married my childhood sweetheart. We'd had two beautiful children, and some of my friends drank a little bit. And this girl that I married, I was very insecure with her. I was jealous, and I was working out on the river at the time, and I accused her of a lot of things that she wasn't doing. I didn't know what I was dealing with. I just knew that she was running around on me, and I doubt very seriously that she was. But that marriage ended in divorce, and I had got off of that boat, and I went down to my lifelong dream, and that was to sell automobiles. I wouldn't advise anybody to sell automobiles. But I didn't have any education, and I wanted to be a big shot, and that's what those people looked like to me. They drove cars and wore suits, and they played golf a lot, and they run around. And I had heard my dad out on that golf course talking about some of the things him and his salesman and these salesmen played with him, and they was talking about things that I wanted to do, and they were doing these things after hours. And I had developed that in my mind, that's all that I wanted to do. And I got this job with the Hull Dobbs Company in 1959 in Memphis, Tennessee. And for the next 2 years, I come as close to starving to death as anybody you've ever seen in your entire life. Because they were ruthless people. And I took that dream that I had of being a big shot, and a friend of mine had went up north. He had went to the Midwest. He was in Ohio, and he was selling recreational real estate, and he called me, and he said, how would you like to have a job with us? And I asked him, I said, well, what are you doing, and what are you making? And it was more important to me of what he was making than what he was doing, because if he'd have been stealing and making, I'd have been in it. And he was selling recreational real estate, and he said he had made X number of dollars, and I said, that's for me. And very shortly, I got in a car that my mother had given me and had about $300 that my family had gathered up, my enablers, and they sent me up north on a journey that I had no earthly idea what I was doing, where I was going, what I was going to do when I get there. But you see, I knew that I was going to do fine. And I got up there, and I stayed about 5 or 6 weeks, and I didn't sell one piece of real estate, and I was about as low as you can get. And I told this friend of mine that had asked me to come up here, I said, I need $25. He said, for what? I said, I got to go back to Memphis. I can't do this. You could travel in those days for $25. And he said, stay one more weekend, Bob. And so I did, and I sold a piece of real estate, and I made $500. Now, here's a fella that left Memphis. They was right on the verge of repossessing my home. I was behind on everything that I had ever owed in my life. The family got up enough money to send me to Ohio, where I went. And I made this $500, and I called Sybil that night, and I said, honey, our worries are over. That's how I thought. $500 made me feel like a giant. Well, for the next 12 years, I had walked into an alcoholic's dream. When I got up there, part of our selling material or paraphernalia was every morning on the way to work, we stopped and iced down 2 cases of beer and bought a fifth of whiskey and stuck it down in the cooler for our customers, and we were allowed to drink while we were showing them this real estate. And for 12 solid years, every day of my life, not 5 days a week, 7 days a week, we done this, and I drank like I done everything else in my life. And we done good up there. I had left Memphis with nothing, and I got in Ohio, and I got in the big time. I was thinking about, Dave last night was talking about Raleigh, and I was drunk one time and run off with a friend of mine and some people, and we got over in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I knew I had to go back home, and if I didn't buy Sybil a new car there and drive it back to the job, I ain't sitting here. And I called her and told her, I said, look, I want you to come on out here to the lake. We got to talk. And she said, yeah, we're going to talk, all right. And boy, she come flying out that lake, and just as she turned in, she seen this new car, and she knew it was hers. And she never said a word to me. And that happened all my life. I always bought my way in. I would send a motorcycle home to one of the boys. I would do anything because I was on the run. I was in the big time. I mean, I was making, back in the 60s and early 70s, I was making some money that most salesmen do not make. And I had worked my way in a position to where we were stealing as much money as we was making. And there was a lot of ways to do that. I had dinner parties all over this country. And I was taking a dollar a plate. And I was serving 400 and 500 people a night. And I was taking a dollar a plate just so I would give that man my business. Money was flowing everywhere. And we had cars and we had clothes and we had jewelry. And we flew in Lear jets and we done everything that a man can do. And 12 years later, because of alcohol, they called me in. I was in Ohio, and it was snowing, and they called me in. They said, Bobby, we can't use you anymore. Now, I went to Ohio with nothing, and Sybil had to call my dad, my stepfather, that is, and he flew to Ohio and rented a truck and got me out of Ohio. Now, this big shot started with nothing, and when he left Ohio, he had nothing. Because, you see, I took this money and this big shot idea of mine, and I spent every nickel that I ever made in my life, and plenty more, being a big shot, trying to make Bob feel equal to you, because I was never equal unless I had more than you, if I could buy something new or impress you in some way. I could never stand on my own 2 feet, tell you who I was, and feel good about it. I literally could not do that. At this point, I have drank daily for 12 solid years, a lot before I got to Ohio. And now I'm back in Memphis, and I'm about as pitiful a human being as you have ever seen in your life. My brother is a member of Broadmoor Baptist Church, and my mother and all of them was trying to help me. And I had developed, because of alcohol, I was sitting in the middle of the floor when my dad come after me. And I had a sensation come over me, and it was, as I know it today, I went to the doctor about it, but it's tinnitus. And there's a lot of people that have it, but it's a ringing in the head, and I don't ever notice it as long as I have noise around. But if I get in a deathly quiet room, brother, I got to come out of there. But anyhow, we got to Memphis, and my brother had told me, and I'm not sure that he wasn't right, But he told me that they had put me on the prayer list at Broadmoor Baptist Church and they had prayed me to Memphis. You see, and I can believe that. Well, they got me to Memphis and I was in pretty bad shape. And so they asked me to, what could we do? We were searching. We didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous to any degree. And so they took me to the Harbor House in Memphis, Tennessee. And there was a fellow out there, so the director, his name was Bill C. He was a big, tall preacher fellow. Some of you may know him. And he sat there with me and my mother and my brother, and he started talking about God. And that's all my brother needed, and my mother is a religious person, so they decided Bob needed to stay there. So I was in pretty bad shape, and I knew that I needed to do something, but I didn't know what. So I said, okay, I'll stay. So about 4 or 5 days later, I had started to eat. I'd got me a couple of nights' sleep, and I'm telling you, I started feeling about as good as I ever remember feeling in my entire life. And I said, this is it. Boy, this is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. And while I was out there at the Harbor House, they told me about this white chip that they offered out there. And what the man said was, back in those days, he said, you take this chip and you tape a dime on it. That's how long ago it was. He said, you tape a dime on it, and should you decide to drink, call your sponsor. Well, I didn't know who my sponsor was, but it was okay with me. I put a dime on there and put it in my pocket. So about 20, well, it was, they also told me out there, he said, if you decide to drink and you're not going to call anybody, break that chip in two. What he was saying to me is maybe something will snap in your head and you won't take that drink. Well, that was fine, and I stayed there about 25 days, and I never felt better in my life, and my wife and I had got out of the Harbor House, and we joined Broadmoor Baptist Church, and I had quite an experience at that time. My sons, my two boys, my Sybil, they had started going to Broadmoor, and we had worked it out and all to where they were to be baptized, and this particular night, they baptized both of my sons and me at the same time, and that was quite an experience. I do not remember any time before or since that I felt any closer to God than I did when we was at Broadmoor. I was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we were doing good. I was becoming a good citizen, I believe. But you see, there was something happening to me that I didn't know anything about. I was dealing with the insanity of alcoholism. I didn't know anything about the insanity. I had been at the Harbor House 28 days. I had been to several meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, but you see, I didn't know. And one day, I had got a job selling cars, and one day, this insanity come to me, and it said, it'll be all right. One more time. You know how much fun it is out there with that neon and nylon. We got to get out there. So you see, what my mind told me at this moment as I was driving down Summer Avenue is that man that told me, should I ever decide to take a drink to snap that white chip, what he said to me at that instant was, Bobby, you don't have enough guts to break this thing and take a drink. You know us alcoholics, pop. I just popped it and throwed it out the window, pulled right in a whiskey store. And I'm telling you, from that point until it finally knocked me down, was 10 years of the most horrible life that any man could ever live on this earth. I had been to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had got drunk, and I stayed out there about, I don't know, a year and a half. And I went back to the Harbor House, and I spent another 28 days there. And I come out, and I didn't listen, and I couldn't learn, and I didn't know what I was dealing with, and I didn't know about the insanity, and I didn't know about the compulsion, and I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I was just there. And I got dry and I come out and I got me a white chip in the program, and that lasted about 40 days. Then I was off again. And I got drunk again, and I was running around, and I was doing the things that a man shouldn't do. And I was promising things to my family that I couldn't deliver. And it knocked me down again, and so I went to the care unit at the hospital there. Got me another dose of that treatment center, and it was good to me. And I come out, and I got me another white chip. No, sir, I'm off to the races again. You see, what was happening to me was is that I literally could not grasp anything. As I see it today, I wish that I could have got sober at 25 or 30 years old, but I know today that I could not have. You see, I make the excuse sometimes that when I was a young man that I never heard the word Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sure never heard of a treatment center. And you can turn the television on now and they'll tell you if you drink, you're going bad or you're going down the wrong road. But that wasn't true in those days. The first time I ever heard the word Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 30 years old and well into my alcohol at that time. But I kept going, and I would drink enough to where I would be like a zombie. I would not even know where I was or who I was. And twice they locked me up at the Baptist Hospital on the 8th floor, and that's the loony bin, or the crazy, where they put the people really, really out of it. And they locked me up there like an animal. And I would come two or three days later, and I would stumble down the hall, and I'd see people sitting in there in these white gowns and all. They'd be sitting around these tables, and I'd ask them where I was. I'd finally figure out what I was doing there. And I come out of there, and you see, I was, I just had to do what I wanted to do. And so I went back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And then they opened a new one there in Memphis called Lakeside, and I had never been there. So I'm telling you that I went to Lakeside, and they had some doctors out there. And they give me a shot. I don't know what it was, but it was the best shot I've ever had in my life. And when I woke up the next morning, it was like I'd been sober 5 or 6 days. I didn't have, man, it was great. I thought, man, if we could have that shot every night, it was great. And I've been to the Harbor House back when and shook it off 2 or 3 times when, you see, they wouldn't even let you have an aspirin out there. And they certainly wouldn't give you anything to taper off, as Dave said. And I've seen some strange things on the floor at the Harbor House coming off one of them drunks. And as it ended up, I went through 13 of these places. And I went to Alcoholics Anonymous back and forth. And I picked up white chips, and I never but one time in my life ever I ever picked up a red chip. One day, Sybil was gone to Oklahoma on a family reunion, and I was down in the bed drunk. That's where it took me. Took me back there to that bedroom. I got at one point, and I love cigarettes. I got at one point to where I could not smoke a cigarette and I could not drink a glass of water, but I could wake up long enough to put another drink down in my throat and pass back out for days on end. My children used to come home at lunchtime from high school and call their mother at work and tell them Dad's still alive. And I've done it a lot of times. I stole my gun, my own sons, I stole their shotguns and went and pawned them to be able to drink alcohol. Alcohol really mistreated me. Sybil was gone to a family reunion in Oklahoma, and she'd been gone 3 or 4 days, and I stayed back there in that bed drinking. And when she come home, we didn't have anything. We didn't have any money, period. And her dad had paid her way over there. And I knew that she would have some money in her purse. And when she come in the house, she went straight to the bathroom, and I stole $5 out of her purse. And I run down to the convenience store, and it was on a Sunday, and I hated Sundays because the whiskey store was closed at 11 o'clock on Saturday night, 11 o'clock every night in Memphis, and brother, until you wake up about 3 o'clock on a Sunday morning out of whiskey, you ain't ready to ever live. It's horrible. And I went and got that beer, and I knew I could nurse enough of it to get me through to Monday morning. Had about that much whiskey left in a little old pint, and I was scared to drink it because I knew somewhere during the night it would get to be almost unbearable and I'd have to take a drink of that whiskey because I didn't care much about beer anyhow. I drank whiskey and I drank it straight, and I drank a lot of it, and I drank it all the time. And I drank it from the time my eyes was open until I passed out, and if I woke up, I drank again. I didn't care what time it was or what day it was. And I drank Christmas, and I drank Thanksgiving, and I drank New Year's, and I drank every moment that my eyes were open. And I'd been to Alcoholics Anonymous 20 times and picked up white chips. And you see, I believe that you can come in this program and sit here and not do anything, then there's a good chance you might die out there drunk, or at least it is for me, because I experienced it. I had been to a psychiatrist. They had put me in the hospital 3 or 4 times, and I had been in every treatment center in that part of the country that would take me. Some of them knew me on a first name basis, and some of them I had run out my eligibility. I couldn't get in there. And I nursed myself through that night with that beer. And the next morning, I asked Sybil, I said, let me have $5 if you would. I've got to have something to eat today. And she snatched the $5 out of there and gave it to me. We didn't have anything back then. There was nothing between Sybil and I as far as a man and a wife goes. We were just existing. Now, I drove across town, and I got to the whiskey store at 8:05, and in Memphis, Tennessee, they don't open at 5 till or 5 after. At 8 o'clock, they'll open the doors. And I sit there until the door opened, and I got out of this automobile, and I went up to the door, and I opened the door, and I shut the door and got back in my car. And that was July the 5th, 1984. And from that day to this one, I have never put a drink of alcohol in my mouth. I go to a lot of meetings, and I hear you tell me that sobriety is a gift of God. And when you tell me that, I have no problem identifying. You see, because I had been everywhere to try to get sober. I had been to every treatment center that would take me. I had been to church and asked God to help me. I had been to Alcoholics Anonymous numerous times. I'm not sure I ever wanted any help, but I wanted some heat off. And one day, this God, as I know him today, said, "That's it." And he handed me the gift of sobriety. And it was out of the clear blue sky, and it was free, and I'd done absolutely nothing to deserve it. So I called Sybil and I said, "Well, I'm going to meeting with you tonight," and I felt no different. I had no reason to believe that I was going to get sober. And I'm not sure that I had a desire to get sober. I just knew that I needed to quit hurting this particular time. I have come off of whiskey a great number of times. And it was no different this day. It's just that I didn't go to that whiskey store. I didn't open the door. And I went to the meeting up at the Yap group there in Memphis. And that night, I stayed at home and I didn't drink. And the next night, we went to a meeting and we started going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had been to Alcoholics Anonymous numerous times, and I had no reason to believe that this was any different. And one day, I had about a week, and I was, I could not get a job in Memphis, even though I had done a good job for a lot of people, selling them people a lot of cars. But for some reason, if you wreck enough of them, they just absolutely can't hire you. And I couldn't get a job in Memphis, and I was directed out to a little town of Collierville, Tennessee, which is about 10 miles outside the city limits. And I had got me a job there, and I had attended. We was about maybe a week or two dry, I was, and I was coming up, and this insanity had returned to me. And it was setting me up and telling me, you know, that a lot of things can go on. We can have a good time. We can do this and we can do that. And I was coming across Houston Levy, and the thought occurred to me, now, I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1966 in Youngstown, Ohio. This is 84. I've been to a lot of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've heard you people say a whole lot of things. The thought occurred to me as I'm coming across Houston Levy, you don't have to quit drinking. You just don't need to drink today. I don't know how many times you had told me that you can do this thing one day at a time. And I'm coming across Houston Levy, and that thought, God opened my mind and said, here it is. Here's the key. You don't have to drink today. It got so bad for me at times that my mind wanted to go and do whatever it wanted to do. And I loved to party. And I tell you, it got so bad at times that I told myself that I had made a promise to myself not to drink today. I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. And this is me thinking these thoughts. I said, if it's this good, we'll do it tomorrow. I have given in to myself and said, we'll party tomorrow. And I'm telling you, people, I have woke up the next morning so thankful that I didn't take a drink, that it's unbelievable. And you see, that's not my nature. That's not my nature for thoughts like that to come into my mind. God had come in and given me this gift of sobriety. He just handed it to me. And if he handed me a gift, then he's got to help me along. And when he was helping me along and I was trying a little bit, then he started opening up my mind so that I could hear these things. And I was reading in this book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I had read several times. And I finally got in a doctor's opinion and found out who I was and why I'd done some of the things that I do. And you see, I'm like a lot of other alcoholics. I thought that it was a moral issue. I thought that I was just sorry, because I had knew a lot of people that didn't run around on their wives, and they didn't steal, and they didn't do these things that I'd done, and I just thought that I was sorry. And I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I heard you tell me who you was. You see, and I thought, man, I'm really the same as they are. And I started identifying to you, because I don't believe. You see, I hear a lot of discussions around Memphis and around some of these groups about who you are when you get here. Well, I am one of the ones that believes in the primary purpose, because I'll assure you of one thing. If I hadn't been there, I can't tell you about it. And I can tell you about alcohol because I've been there. But I absolutely would not give you any advice on your marriage or your financial situation or your other problems. Because if I hadn't been there, I probably can't talk to you about it. But Sybil and I had been in this program about 6 or 8 months, and we met another couple. This is how Alcoholics Anonymous worked for me. We met this fellow and we liked him, and the wives liked each other, and there was another guy there, and we would go to the meetings together. And after the meetings, me and Terry and Jerry would get outside, and we would comment on what y'all was telling us, and it wasn't very favorable, because I said a lot of times, "Can you believe it? That fella said something like it. That's the dumbest thing I ever heard in my life." And we criticized, you see, and we done all the things that a new man can do. And what we didn't know was that we was having coffee with each other, and we was going to each other's house, and we run off to Eureka Springs to go to a convention, and we was going to the meetings and all these things, and we was getting sober, and we didn't even know it. We didn't know anything about sobriety. We didn't know anything about sobriety. And then I got uncomfortable in this group where I was, and I'd heard somebody say, "Well, you can outgrow the group, or you can outgrow your sponsor." Well, I just, you know, sounded like a thing to do to me, so I just outgrew them. And I went down to a group that absolutely to me was the most cliquish, egotistical bunch of people I ever met in my life. I hated the group and I hated the people. And I went right down there and joined the group and asked the man I hated the most to be my sponsor. You think God won't intervene? I didn't like him because he had what I wanted. He had a nice, beautiful wife. He had plenty of money. He had a lot of sobriety. And I thought he was a big shot. And he ain't such a big shot, but I wanted what he's had. His name's Milton. I love him to death. Milton has literally saved my life. And his wife, Joanne, and those people came into our life. God put them in our life, and they brought me along. They brought my little wife along, and some of the things that Joanne has taught my wife, I don't especially like. But that seems to be the way that it is today. And Milton started telling me some things. And he told me about these resentments that I was harboring and what I needed to do about them. And you see, he told me, he said, "Bob, you got to get you a home group. You got to stay right here. And you got to get in this group and you got to become part of it. Ain't no need for you to get here at 8 o'clock and leave at 9 and think you're going to Alcoholics Anonymous. You need to be here about 7:30. And whenever we turn the lights out here tonight, then we'll all leave together. Because there's a lot of things that goes on here." And he said, "You need to help us around here, and you need to get you some roots in this group and keep you a sponsor, and you need to help these fellows that's coming in here." He said, "When they come in, I want you to get up and shake their hand and tell them who you are and see if you can help them." You know, it's a funny thing to me, because this is the way that I am. I'm so terribly obsessed with rejection. I have the greatest fear of rejection, and it was so bad that when I was in the alcohol, it was unbelievable. But it's amazing to me that here we are, we come to a place like this, and we're all in the same boat. We're alcoholics, or we're family of alcoholics, and we're here and we see somebody over there, and we literally just can, or I can, I just can't go over and say, "I'm Bob and I love you." I mean that I do, and I can look at you and I know that I do, but for me to do it is a horse of a different color. I was amazed at George. I had never met George before, but George will tell you in a New York minute he loves you. And these people around here can do that, and one of these days I might be able to. I remember the first time that this friend of mine, he's like a big teddy bear, and he can love you and hug you. It's unbelievable. And I'm new in the program, and I walk in the group, and this fellow man puts his arms around me and pulls me real tight and says, "I love you." And man, I'm stiffer than a board. I had never had no man tell me he loved me. And it was good. My wife and I live a good life today. We go a lot of places. She goes more than I do, and around the Memphis area and some of the outlying areas, and even here it was mentioned to me one time, I'm about as well known as Sybil's husband as I am Bob. Of course, she's been in the program a long time, and she goes a lot of places I don't go. But I always wanted to be an upstanding member of my family and of society. And after I'd got into Alcoholics Anonymous and we had started to live the right spiritual kind of life as we know it today, there was some times in our sobriety when, I guess the big time was when Sybil's dad got sick and he was dying. And when he died, you see, I was there. I was there to support my wife and to hold her up and tell her it was okay. And I've been there for my children. There was a time when my grandchildren were not allowed in my home, and I was not allowed in my own children's home. And that's very understandable because I was a slobbering, filthy drunk. And I'll tell you this, if one of my boys or my daughter has any problem today, whether it be big or little, I am the first man to take off. And you see, that's what I'm supposed to be. That's part of my job. Just because my kids are grown doesn't let me alleviate from them, because I can't do that. I can't separate from my kids. I don't know anything about, and I'm not knocking it, but I don't know anything about tough love. I just really don't. Because I'll go anywhere and do anything for one of my boys. By the same token, they really haven't caused me that much problem. If they come in my house and was to slap around on my wife, then they would know something about tough love. A couple of my boys and my daughter had some problems. They done some drinking, and they done some other things that I don't know a lot about. And I'm not saying that I'm the one that caused it, but I'm saying to you that I have been in this great program now for a little over 8 years, and they haven't quit completely. But you see, my boys and my daughter doesn't have any problem anymore with alcohol. As I know it today, they're not alcoholics, but I don't know where they might have went, and I don't know that I had anything to do with it. But I'll tell you one thing, when they come to my house, I'm sober. When I'm going somewhere, they know I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the great fears that I have today is that should I return to drinking, and somewhere down the road one of my boys is laying in that gutter drunk, needing help, I would never want him to be able to say, "There's no need to go to AA," because it didn't work for Dad. I got a lot more to lose the day than I ever had in my entire life. And there's been times in my life when I had a whole lot of more material things than I do today. And I didn't know anything about what life was all about or what really made a man happy. And you see, what makes me happy today is to be standing there and see one of my sons come out of the delivery room and say, "Dad, it's a boy," or "Dad, it's a girl." And me be standing there sober. We was at that last one here last month, and three or four of the people were standing around there, and some of the other grandfather and all, they was talking about whether we going home or what are we going to do, and we need to do this because she ain't coming in till about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I said, "I'm staying for every dance." I stayed for every dance everywhere I ever went in my life, and I'm sure staying for every dance when it comes to one of my kids being born. We have a great life today, thanks to you. You know, it's like I said earlier, it's a good thing you come along when you did, because I'd be having an awful lot of trouble if you didn't. I want to end with this. I heard a fellow say this one time, and they always told me that if you mention his name once, then it becomes yours. So I'm not going to tell you who said it. But I'll tell you this, that I love you, and everything that I ever hoped to be and that I am today, I owe to this great program. Because the man that you see, the man that I was, drank. And the man that I was will drink again. Thank you.